I think we are almost 20 minutes behind time. Honorable members, let us start our meeting. We have here officials from Auditor General's office. We have Ms. Connie Maybeck, who's the business executive, the one who's auditing DWAF. And with her is Mr. Kobus Botes, the senior manager who's based here in Cape Town. And Ms. Nkopotse Nsaba, senior manager, also based in Cape Town. I think Ms. Connie Maybeck will be the one who will be the presenter. I should think you were formally advised that your presentation will be in the afternoon. Unfortunately, we changed the program. We were supposed to finish at 1, and we were made to understand that Mrs. Maybeck was still on her way. So that's why not all the members are present, because members had already rescheduled their flights. So but at least there is 5 of us here, and mostly from all parties. I think it's only one big party which is not here. All bigger parties are represented. So without any waste of time, I will then request the presenter to take the stage. And we also want to apologize for the chairperson who has also had to leave early. I'm the whip. I'm just standing in chairperson. And my name is Matele. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity. Thank you to the members for allowing me to explain and to take you through our audit process. For us, it's very important, and we do have a promise, a mission, where we say that we do have a constitutional mandate, and in that mandate we exist to enhance democracy. And we want to allow and enable more oversight, governance, and accountability. To at the end of the day be in a position where we can say we've built and we've grown public confidence. That is our mission, and that is what we want to do in our auditing, because that's all that we can do. We have a mandate to audit. Our audit legislation, besides the fact that we are listed in the Constitution, we also do have a Public Audit Act. And in that act, there's 3 specific things that we need to report on. We need to, and we have to, conclude on the financial statement, whether it's fairly presented. We have to conclude on compliance with laws and regulations. And then the last one that's becoming more critical is the performance information. We have to conclude or express an opinion on performance information against predetermined objectives. In addition, the Auditor General may report on whether resources were obtained economically, the effectiveness and efficient use thereof. In the audit process, we have essentially 4 phases. In supporting our Public Audit Act, we've issued the Gazette last year May. In all our audit reports, we do refer to that Gazette. It confirms the audit standards that we work against. It's the basis approach for the financial opinion, compliance with legislation, the auditor performance information, evaluation of financial management. It also gives the basis for performance auditing, investigations, and special audits. The difference between auditor performance information and performance audit is, with auditor performance information, it's part of our regularity audit. We need to do it annually. We need to eventually express an opinion on that. Performance audit is the free ease, where we may be requested, where it's in public interest, that we perform additional audits there. So it's 2 separate. And it also confirms the basis of accounting, the present that we've issued. Okay, now we're on that one. The phases of the audit process, essentially, as I said, there's 4 phases: the engagement activities, planning, execution, and reporting. Our execution we divide into interim audits and final audits. Going to more detail in terms of the engagement activities, that is when we start. Right, beginning of the year, it will be right about August, September. We start to enter into discussions with the client, getting background information. We agree the terms of reference and the terms of our engagement. And we assess the risk and we also determine what is the skills base that we need in our audit team. As soon as we've agreed on the terms, we go into the detailed planning. That is where we get a full understanding of what's going on at the audit team. We assess the risk. We identify controls that mitigate those risks. And these two will determine the approach that we will follow for the year, for the audit for the coming year. If there's high risk and no controls, we'll expand our procedures and we will do our samples will be bigger. If there's risk, but there's controls to mitigate this risk, we will select a smaller sample. After our planning, we will start with our execution. You will see right through the process, there's interaction, there's communication, we're requesting for information. This is where we sit and we execute the procedures. We usually talk about the pick and attorney, where we test our decisions. We will communicate our findings to management, all in the process to make sure that our findings is actually correct. At no stage is the audit a one-way. It's always a two-way. Getting information, making sure our findings is actually correct. Then, in our conclusion and finalization phase, once again, there's meetings with management and those sorts of governance. We won't always see the DG. I mean, during execution, we will basically focus and have our discussions at the CFO level. But once we get to a finalization and clearing all these findings and discussing the final outcome, we will move up to accounting officer level. And if necessary, we'll make an appointment with the minister to discuss these findings and how we can work and correct these findings in future. The difference between an interim and a final audit, we focus a lot on interim audits, especially on the big audits like water affairs. This is really the benefit in that is identifying red flags. There's still time for them to correct. We can do a substantial part of our work. There's no duplication because we do one planning and we do 6 months of the year. But we can identify those weaknesses that they need to start working on to prevent the qualification. So we do advise our audit team to give us permission and to work with us so that we can do the interim audit. The elements of the audit and the audit finding model, everything basically happens in that circle. We have our procedures, we obtain audit evidence, we review, perform our procedures, get audit findings. We ask for more information to see whether it's actually correct. We audit the additional information. And with all this, there's continuous communication with CFO, Accounting Officer Audit Committee. And then we've got our own processes to make sure that it is factually correct, that we do meet our standards, that we do accept the right opinion. And once we've completed all of that, we get to the final document, our audit report, that eventually becomes a public document. As I said, communication is crucial throughout the audit. Communication with the Accounting Officer Audit Committee, Management Board, Executives. We do have regular steering meetings at the Water Affairs. Currently, we've got bi-weekly steering meetings where we discuss the findings, any challenges that we have, documentation that we need that we don't get in time, so that we can, as soon as possible, resolve this to smooth the process of the audit. And then the teams are sitting at the audit team, so there's day-to-day interaction. There's day-to-day communication, requesting of information. Our audit reports, as you know, we've got unqualified audit reports, that is what everybody is working towards, where we come to a point that we say the financial statements are fairly presented, and there's nothing that we need to draw attention to. Then we have qualified audit reports, that is where one component or two components, we didn't get enough audit evidence to support the figures disclosed, to verify the figures disclosed in the financials. So we will have an opinion that says, except for assets, the financial statement is fairly stated, so we will exclude one or two components. With a disclaimer, in that case there's no documentation or there's a limitation of scope, so we're actually not in a position to express an opinion. So then we say that due to the lack of information, we could not express an opinion on the financial statement. And with the adverse, that's actually the worst opinion. There we disagree. With the financial statements that we received and the audit work that we performed, we then say that it was so significant that we disagree with the financial statements that was presented to us. And the emphasis of matter. Emphasis of matter doesn't impact on the audit report or the audit opinion. But we highlight and draw attention to certain matters, and there's only five issues that we can draw attention to. If there's a going concern where the auditee won't function within the next, keep on functioning in the next 12 months, if there's significant uncertainty, for instance, if there's litigation, a lawsuit against the department, and we don't know what the outcome is going to be, usually the department will disclose it. But because it's a financial statement and everybody doesn't always understand financial statements, we draw attention to significant uncertainty. We highlight matters affecting the financial statements that's included in the note, just to draw attention to that, and then material inconsistencies in information included in the annual report. Our financial statements is eventually included in the annual report, and we do need to consider that information to make sure it's in line with what we've audited. So if there's any inconsistency, we will draw attention to it here under emphasis of matter. And then the last one is the deviation from the basis of accounting or departures from the approved basis of accounting. As I say, that doesn't impact on the audit opinion at all. Then the audit report format. If we compare the Auditor General's audit report format to one of the private firms, you'll see there's a lot more information in our audit report than in a listed entities report. The reason for that is we continuously listen to what is the need outside, what do we need to report, and based on our legislative mandate as well, we need to report more information. So we have an extended format. The first thing that we include is the root causes. We started with financial management, identifying the reason for findings. Why doesn't people adhere to own policies and procedures? It might be a case that they aren't aware, there's a lack of information and communication through the staff, there's a lack of training, maybe there isn't a policy. So in our audit process, we try to identify the reason for the findings. Because we believe if they focus on that reason, they will resolve it in future. We don't just want departments to focus on the symptom, but rather fix the root cause. So we do highlight the root cause in our audit report. We create context to the audit findings. Just to give that bit of more background, why it happened, the reason, so that there's a better understanding when people read our audit report. We lift the bar in terms of reporting on issues of governance. If you have a look at our audit report, you'll see there's a table with governance issues. Do they have an audit committee? Does it substantially comply to what they're supposed to do? Is there internal audit? Did they adhere and address COPA resolution? So there's a whole table with governance issues, and we basically tick yes, they adhere, or no, they didn't adhere, or they didn't comply. So it gives a bit more background in terms of how is their governance within the department. Alignment of audit standards. We still need to adhere to the auditing standards. So with this extended format, we still need to make sure that we comply with international audit standards. Streamlined and complete general report process. Once we're done with this process, we prepare a general report where we give a consolidation of all the audit reports in the portfolio. And this information just helps and flows into the general report. So we want to give enough information here without creating a gap between audit reports and general report. Okay, so I spoke about the extended format. So what is in the audit report? There's basically three three sections. The first one is reporting the financial statements. We start off with the introduction, responsibilities of the accounting officer, responsibility of the auditor general. We will give our opinion, the unqualified, qualified, adverse, or disclaimer, the reason for that opinion will be stated there, and if there's any emphasis of matter that we want to draw attention to, it will be in the first section. The second section is other matters. If we've identified any significant non-compliance, we basically focus on non-compliance of PFMA and laws that regulate the auditing, that describe their mandate and their role. Then we also have the governance table in the second section, and the root causes will be explained there. In the last section is reporting on other information, other responsibilities, and that is the performance information. As we're moving towards expressing an opinion on performance information, we decided to separate the two. So there's one clear section on the financial statement and another on performance information. There we will also have responsibilities of the accounting officer, auditor general, and then any findings that we've identified during our process. In the auditing of performance information, there's different roles and responsibilities. We have Treasury that's responsible for developing the framework. Then Cabinet and legislators that approve policy, the strategic plans, the budget. Executive authority must implement the approved plan and monitor achievement. And then it's our role to review and confirm validity completeness of this performance report. So everybody do have a role in performance information. The strategy, when we started and the Public Audit Act became effective, we realized that we're not in a position just to go in and express an opinion. So we adopted a phase-in approach that started in 2005-06. Every year we did a bit more procedures, expanded. In the beginning we just obtained the understanding of what is in the department, how is this strategic plan looks like. So we expanded to that, and we now decide that this will be the last year that we won't express an opinion. 2019, we will go do a full audit, and we will actually, in the same way that we express an opinion on the financial statement, express on performance information. So what do we do when we look at performance information? Firstly, obtain understanding. We need to understand their policies, their procedures, systems that they have in place to collect and record information. Then we evaluate the existence of performance information, the consistency thereof. Is it consistent between different reports? There's quarterly reports, there's a strategic plan, quarterly reports, and then annual reports. Is the information throughout consistent? And then presentation. Do they comply with the format that Treasury prescribes? And then last, we compare the reported performance information to the relevant source documentation to make sure that it's accurate, complete, and valid. So what will we report in 2008-09? As I said, there will be no opinion in this year. But we will report if there's any non-compliance. We will report if there's any inconsistencies between what was approved and what is reported. If they report less than what was approved, and if they report more objectives than what was approved. If objectives are not measurable, we'll report to say that measures wasn't measurable, and therefore we couldn't audit that. Actual reported performance information cannot be substantiated, so we do go to the source documentation to verify accuracy. So if we can't get to the source documentation, we will report that. And then the last one is, if we don't receive the information in time, we will have a paragraph in there to say that information wasn't submitted in time, so therefore we couldn't audit performance information. When we started with the general report, we analyzed information, and so at the point we asked, why certain departments, why can they have an unqualified opinion compared to other departments that have qualifications? What do they do different? And we basically identified six good practices that was evidence throughout all the unqualified opinions. And it is a clear audit trail. So when we go in and we ask for information, it's available, it's clear, it's direct, and they can give it almost immediately to us. Quality of financial statements. Financial statements is prepared to such an extent that it's not really necessary for them to make any adjustments. It comes back again to say there's deep financial management, there's information available that supports the financial statement, and that gives them the opportunity and basically allow the department to prepare accurate financial statements. Timeline. Timeline for financial statements and management information is there's a quick turnaround time, they do meet deadlines. Availability of key officials during audits. When we experience any problems and we want a meeting, then those key officials are available to address and to help come to a solution. Development of compliance of risk management and good internal controls and governance practices. They have all the governance, audit committees, internal audit, all those requirements are in place and it works and it is effective. And then the last one is supervision and monitoring. There's a doubt that we have all these controls, they have great policies in place, but nobody monitors it to make sure that staff do adhere and comply to those. So monitoring was also one of the good practices that resulted in positive audit outcomes. Our time frame is pretty much described by the public PFMA. We start with our planning, August, September. Our interim audit is usually during September to February. The other difference between an interim audit and a final audit is we only have a management report. We don't have an audit report at that stage. So it's only red flags communicated to the auditees. Our final audit will be between May, March and May. 31st May, we must receive financial statements. And as soon as we receive financial statements, we can focus on the audit on the financial statement. Our audit report must be signed by 31st July. And then we go into the process of the general report and the consolidated report that is due October. Just in short, I just have one slide on the current situation at Water Affairs. You can see that the department for 2007 and 8 had a qualification and the water trading account as well. If we look at this year, it seems that it will basically be the same outcome. Qualification again at the department on assets. We can't verify the existence of assets. The valuation of assets is a problem. And then there's also concerns around the system that the department has in place to record performance information. There's inconsistencies between provinces in how they deal with collecting information, what they capture. Then at the water trading account, same as the qualification, they have deposits that they can't at this stage allocate. They do have a plan identifying and allocating, but at this stage it's still material that will result in a qualification. And then because they interlink with the department, it's difficult to identify the assets that belong to trading accounts and the assets that belong to the department. So the qualification at the department and the trading account is basically interlinked. Water Research Commission, they've got the unqualified opinion last year, and all intention or all indication is that it will be unqualified again this year. And that is our audit process. I'm finished. You were still enjoying it.
Really, this is a nice presentation. Thank you for this presentation, Mrs. Connie Maybeck. I will now open for comments, questions and clarification from the members. I see Honorable Lovemore, Honorable Luenga. Before that, maybe if you can also just explain again, I didn't get it correctly, the difference between the unqualified, qualified, disclaimer and address. And also, I just want to know as to what are the powers of an auditor general regarding, say, for instance, if a particular accounting officer refuses to hand some requested information to the AG, does the AG have the powers to summon that particular person or what? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And the question I'm going to ask, I'm not sure if it's unfair to ask you, but nevertheless, I'm very interested. The Auditor General's Office has been carrying out, for the past number of years, has been carrying out environmental audits, certainly on the metropolitan municipalities. I don't know if on others. My home municipality is the Nelson Mandela Bay municipality. It is one of those that has been audited over the last number of years, and has had a number of, I don't know what they call them, you'd be able to help me. It's not that you get a qualified audit, but there are a number of exceptions, yes, which are not acted upon at all, because certainly in my home municipality's case, the municipal manager does not take it seriously. He says the Auditor General has no legal mandate to come and tell them what to do on an environmental. I'm being honest, that's what happens. So it's a piece of paper that is compiled every year, or a report, more than a piece of paper, that is compiled every year, and absolutely no action arises from it. I don't know what happens in other municipalities, but I'm very interested to know the mandate, first of all, that you have, and how that is going to develop, and how seriously municipalities, and we, in fact, from an oversight point of view, should take that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Let me appreciate the clear presentation that has actually been put before this committee. My question, in fact, it's a clarity-seeking one, and it's a rider to what the chairperson has asked in relation to the powers that are vested upon the AG. Fully understanding the fact that no one can be taken to court on the basis of the AG's information. But what is it that can be done? Is the law against a notion that if there is a perpetual qualification on the part of an institution and there is no condemnation on the part of that institution to respond to the issues that have been raised by AG, like a department with qualified reports for 6 consecutive years. I mean, there are also municipalities, Chair, for your information, which will consider an AG's report and have an audacity to say, we don't endorse this particular report, and they continue to be in touch. I mean, it's an institution, this one, which I think needs to be empowered more in terms of maybe summoning people, maybe taking decisions that would compel that particular political head of that department or institution into task. Thank you.
Honorable member.
Honorable Morgan. No question. I just want to say thank you very much for your presentation. And Joe, I commend you and your colleagues for the superb work that you do amongst all entities. And I don't think you and your colleagues get enough praise for the critical role that you play in South Africa and in the consolidation of sound public finance that, according to your motto, helps to build public confidence. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Member. And I can see Honourable Hreleng also is concurring with you. He was nodding when we were speaking. Can you then respond to questions raised by the members?
Thank you. can go back to the different opinions that we have. The first one is the unqualified opinion. That is really what everybody should strive towards. That is a clean bill of health saying financial statement is a fair presentation. There's no matters that we want to draw attention to. Everything is 100%. Then we come to a qualified opinion. Basically, we say except for, in our wording it will say except for assets or except for revenue, financial statements is a fair presentation. So in general, things are well and going good, but there's specific components that we couldn't audit sufficiently or we couldn't get enough audit assurance to express an opinion on. So we exclude certain components from the set of financial statements. When it comes to a disclaimer, it's actually where we have a limitation of scope. So we couldn't get enough audit information supporting documentation. And it is so pervasive, so it touches on so many components that it just flows throughout the full set of financial statements. And then we say, because of this limitation, we're not in a position to express an opinion. So we actually withhold an opinion on that set of financial statements. And the worst opinion that we can express is adverse. That is where financial statements is prepared, but based on the audit work that we have, it is in total contravention. We disagree with what management is saying in their financial statement. So then we say, based on our evidence, it is so significant that we disagree with management's financial statements that they prepared. So we basically disregard everything that they have in there. Then in terms of the powers of the Auditor General, unfortunately we cannot summon anybody. Our powers and our role is as we have it in our reputation promise. We want to build public confidence through our auditing by enabling oversight committees to strengthen their hands to perform oversight, to enable governance structure, to keep people accountable, to give to the accounting officer or to the scope enough information so that those people who contravened or resulted or were responsible for qualifications, so that they can be held accountable for actions that they took or didn't take. So that is as far as our responsibility is. We can't go and say, there's now 6 years of qualification, so now we're going to do A, B, and C. Unfortunately, our mandate starts with auditing and reporting, and then we hand over, and then it's the oversight body to go the further step and to take action. Environmental audit. I know there was environmental audit in terms of health as well. It's part of that three areas where we must report on. It's part of the compliance. We don't always look at all the acts. We do have a rotation plan. And in terms of our performance audits, we can select them like environmental audits. So yes, we do have a mandate and we can audit compliance to specific acts. But once again, we report on the findings, but we can't enforce our recommendations. Then it's in terms of the oversight body to make a resolution, to interrogate the report and to see what resolutions can be taken to resolve the findings. Do you want to add anything to that? Oh, no. Sorry, did I address all the questions or did I miss something?
I'll check with the members whether they are satisfied, but also mine was in two parts. The other part of the question was whether the AG's office has the power to subpoena particular official to deliver those documents that they don't want to provide you with.
And I think we can summon somebody. Our Public Audit Act is very specific to say that if we need documentation in order for us to perform our duties during the course of the audit, all those documentation must be made available to us. So in terms of the Act, we are entitled to that, but we cannot summon. I know there's a section in the Act that says we can seize documentation, but we haven't went that step. We haven't implemented that as yet. And if you want to add something on that.
Chair, there is seizure and so forth powers, but maybe on a practical level, do you find that you actually get stopped by the department, or does it really ever become necessary to summon?
Just to add, no. In some cases, we don't get all the information, but usually when departments realize that it's going to result in a disclaimer, they will try their utmost to present as much information to us as possible. if they hear the word disclaimer, they usually have a fright.
On a lighter note, I just think you might be moved out of Treasury and into the Presidency now that they've set up a monitoring and evaluation section. But I mean, the serious part of that is, I mean, I would imagine your work, particularly on the performance indicators, would be of huge use to the Presidency's new ministry in that particular area. And hopefully then this will also have more teeth, so that actually action will be taken against people when you give disclaimers and that. So.
Mr. Porter.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Maybe just to make clear that we're actually not part of the Treasury. We're a Chapter 9 institution that we should be very proud of, that constitutional independence that we've been given to serve you better. I think that's where the constitutional mandate and our reputation promise comes from. But certainly I think we're hoping that our information will be used by as many institutions, especially some of these new institutions, for monitoring and then ultimately by yourself, of course, for oversight. I think the tricky is the oversight part, is how the oversight structures and mechanisms such as yourself can leverage this information which is made available to you.
The upsell of any other follow-up. You want to make a follow-up? No, okay. Yeah, I think members would agree with me that this was the shortest and the most clear of them all. Really, you did your homework, and we are very much happy. We were able to really clarify all the things that we wanted, and opened our minds. You know, we are, as of now, we can really know what, when we say we're talking of the report, as to why do we say this audit opinion is disclaimer or it's absent. We are now able to understand as to why is it got like that. So we really want to thank you very much for that. And wishing you best and nice trip back home. Honorable members, thank you very much also for remaining behind when others were rushing home. Really worth it. So this meeting is therefore adjourned.